Are you looking for new books to read? Do you like finding a new special author? Are you tired of the same old books from the same old authors? Well then, welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where you can hear from fantastic new authors. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have worked hard to write great new books. Hear about their book and why you should check it out. So sit back and listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Welcome to another great episode of Discovered Wordsmiths, and this is an exciting episode because today I have the very first USA Today bestseller that is been on my podcast. Now, normally I wouldn't even come close to having someone like that on here because that's not what I focus on. I focus on new authors, authors still working hard for their career. But Anne is a little different. I know a lot of you probably haven't even heard of her. And she got the USA bestseller kind of by surprise, didn't even expect it. But that doesn't mean that she didn't deserve it. So it's an exciting one for me because she's still unknown, not somebody that everybody talks about and fits very well on the podcast and has a whole lot of things that can help to help other authors and things to talk about for other authors, plus has some really great books. So that's always the best part of it, is finding some really great books that people can go out and read. So I'm not going to sit around too much longer here. I know Anne's been waiting to get this podcast episode up anyway. So here it goes. All right. So today, Discovered Wordsmiths, I've got Anne Charles, and I'm really excited to talk to you. How are you doing today, Anne?
I'm doing great so far. You know, tomorrow's the big turkey day for us here. So
yes,
I'm making a lot of, you know, not eating much today so I can eat so much pie tomorrow. I just can't wait.
Yeah, we've got way more pies planned than I think should be humanly feasible. But
I don't know. There's never too much pie for those of us who love dessert.
Right, right. Well, I do the turkey. That's my thing. And I've got a really good system. And I'm so proud because I actually remembered all the steps so far. Took it out, put it in the brine. Usually I miss something. So all good.
Right, right. I was just going to ask if you have it brine, if you're brining it yet. So you're on track.
Yeah, I am. My wife wants to do like a oil roaster one year. We haven't done that yet. So we'll see. We're chatting a bit, but tell everybody a little bit about who you are, where you live, what you like to do besides writing.
Besides writing. Anne Charles, and I live in Prescott, Arizona. We're up in the mountains, for those of you who aren't familiar with Arizona. We're not down in the desert like the Phoenix folks. And outside of writing, well, of course, I like to read. But I also love to watch movies. We were talking about your Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark and all that good stuff. So I love all kinds of movies, but action, adventure, sci-fi, anything fun, humor, my favorites. And I really like to watch movies instead of read books because it recharges me in a way that's different. I mean, I do love to read books, don't get me wrong, but there's something about, I think I'm a visual learner, so watching movies really helps me think about how to create dialogue and set up a scene and things like that when I go to sit down and write a story.
It's a quicker process that you can,
right,
rather than spread out over, you know, an hour and a half of reading, you get all the
right
steps. Yeah, I see that too.
Yeah. And I kind of go in thinking of myself as the director, you know, of the story. I'm going to tell everybody, no, let's redo that, you know, which is backspacing. Let's replay that scene out and see how it goes. So, you know, it's just kind of fun to think of it. And when I create on the page, how would this look if it was a movie? How would this book look, you know, if it was a movie starting up? And so I'll approach a lot of my stories that way. I want to open like, you know, you're sitting down, you're in a dark theater and the movie starts.
So do you drive your husband crazy like I drive my wife crazy by, yeah, this is coming up and they're going to do this, and wow, they really should have done that different and blah, blah, blah.
For a long time, yes. But a few years ago, my husband started writing too. I think you know, we talked so much about it. He's been part of this process, you know, since pretty much the beginning. So, and then once he really started in with writing the stories, we co-write one of our series. And now our kids, it's who we drive crazy, but they're pretty good too. They'll go, oh, first turning point. Oh, here comes Black moment, you know, and they'll do all that kind of stuff, a story structure, which is fun.
Yeah, our 14-year-old, like halfway through a movie, will predict what's going to happen at the end. And he's like really good at it. So
he's good, right?
So why did you want to start writing? What made you want to start this career?
I didn't. This was not what I intended to do as I grew up and went through life. You know, I started, one of the things I wanted to do early on was be Indiana Jones, of course, because I was young, you know, when nice. The movies were big. And ironically, I really looked into archaeology and all, you know, different parts of it. And I realized how much writing was going to be involved. And so I shied away from that. And now I write. So I should have just went with archaeology, maybe. and then I went through this bizarre phase. I was reading a lot of romance novels that were set over in England and other places. And I, for ninth grade, we had to draw a picture of what we wanted to be. And I drew myself as a camel jockey, which really surprised my art teacher. He wasn't sure what to think of that. And my more practical good friend, she drew herself with a briefcase to be a social worker. And she did go on to do that. But I have yet to ride a camel. So that didn't pan out either. Flight attendant appealed because you could travel so much, but then that didn't work out. Lawyer. I mean, the list just went on and on, which really shows for me how much my brain was already creating stories of, you know, yeah. what could be. And so going into a story just kind of went naturally. I think that didn't happen until my mid to late 20s. So it was not a, I'm a turtle. I turtle into everything.
I don't consider still in your 20s turtle. I know a lot of people that have spent many more years or decades until they figure it out. And I think sometimes people resist the creative urge. I think that's what it boils down to, is in our society, get a good job, you know, work for the man. Right. And but when you want to do something creative, it's against all of that. And you almost subconsciously feel guilty about it. I think that's where it kind of stems from personally.
So, right. You're right.
So you, as I mentioned when we first got on, you and I were talking, you're unique for me because you're not a new author and you haven't, you know, just gotten your first book out. You're a very successful author. You've been a USA Times bestselling author and you've got multiple books out, which, by the way, after you were on with Jay Thorne, his podcast, I went and looked up some of your books and I'm like, oh, these look perfect for me. I love these.
Oh, awesome.
So tell us about your newest book and some of the other books, the series that you have.
Okay. So if I go way off tangent, remind me where we started.
Okay. We're talking about the books. Well, that's books. Our point right there.
So I have five different ongoing series that I'm working on. And I have one of my biggest ones, which is 12 books in so far, and that's the Deadwood Mystery Series. And that was the first book I published was Nearly Departed in Deadwood, which is the first in that series. And that was a multi-award winning book, and it's sold amazing. It's been a wonderful story, and I just love that series and that world. But that's one of them. And at the same time, that first year when that one first came out, the first book in the Jackrabbit Junction mystery series came out too. So I, right at the get-go, I knew I didn't want to be a one series author because I'd seen that go south for several of my author friends. They get kind of in a groove and they couldn't get out of it. You know, nobody wanted to read anything else. So I knew right away, we got to get at least two out there so that people know, you know, she's going to write this series, but she's also going to do this one and, you know, kind of at least run two parallel. Well, a few years in, then I decided there was a book I'd written actually before all the others. And that was my Dig Site series book, the first in that, which is Look What the Wind Blew In. So I finally pulled that back around, did some tweaking and tied it in because I have an Anne Charles world kind of thing going on.
Okay, nice.
So tied it in so that the hero of the Dig Site series is the brother of the heroine in the Deadwood Mystery series. And so I got I put that one out. I published that one and did the second one in that and got that series going too. So now I have three series I'm trying to keep going, which keeps me busy. And then I got offered to be part of this Kindle Worlds thing that some people might know about, be with another author. And a friend of mine invited me, and I did one. Well, then they canceled that program right. And give it back to me. And so that's the AC Silly Circus series, because it really fit with her world. But then I guess I don't play well in the sandbox with others, because I really made it so I could take it back eventually and have my own world. And so that's, I wrote the second, and that's, those are novellas. So I wrote the second in that series and had that going. And in the meantime, my husband and I we had an idea while watching an Old West film about an undertaker who's a female in the Old West. And it really tied in with my current Deadwood mystery series, which is paranormal mixed into it. And so we decided, I knew I couldn't do this on my own, because, you know, anyone who writes Westerns or historicals, you need to have your history right. You don't just wing it. Right. You need to have things accurate, because readers get really annoyed, as they should, if you mess it up. So my husband's so good at research. He always has been. And he'd been wanting to jump in at some point, you know, and do some writing as well. So this really worked for the two of us to come together and create what we call the Deadwood Undertaker series, which is the Deadwood mystery series back in 1877. What happened before, way back in the 1800s, before modern day, that builds up to what's going on modern day that I write about in that series. So it's a prequel, basically.
Nice.
So we have three of those out, and he's right now getting the fourth going. And so those are all five of my series. And like I said, they all, except for that circus series at the moment, they all have characters that go between, because of the paranormal element that's in the two Deadwood series. They can go through time. That's not a problem. There's ghosts. You know, you have a ghost in a modern day that's maybe somewhat alive in the past, which is really kind of fun. You get to see both sides. But the circus series will be tied in soon. That's the only hint I give to my fans, that it's coming. You'll see the connection soon enough. So that's kind of all of it. Now, the one I just have out, Black Friday, November 26th, that's coming out, that is called Jackrabbit Jingle Balls. And it's the Christmas story for the Jackrabbit Junction mystery series. And it follows up on the Thanksgiving story that was called The Wild Turkey Tango. So, and I just have the proof. You can,
nice.
They covered up his Santa Claus's face, but it's a skeleton Santa Claus.
Right, right.
And if you look at the covers of these series, they all have Sam the Skeleton gracing the covers. So it's a Christmas novella, and it's a story. It's wacky. It's wild. The Morgan sisters, who star in this series, are pretty wild and woolly. They end up in jail now and then. And of course, it's not their fault. It's a mix of kind of Treasure Island, you know, the treasure hunting element with adventure, a little bit of romance, a lot of humor, some dirty jokes. And that's Jackrabbit Jingle Balls. That's your Christmas story right there.
Nice.
So it's just fun. It's not going to probably bring you to tears or anything like that, the big heartwarming, but it's going to make you laugh and smile, and then, you know, a few other things. Cringes, undoubtedly.
Nice. So you've got some paranormal and humor, and you described it kind of a cozy mystery. So what other books out there are similar to yours to let people know if that would be up their alley?
Well, the only thing I have to say, just to clarify, mystery, cozy, only because if I get a cozy author that comes in thinking and it is just cozy, I get mean letters, because I have language on the page, and often there is sex on the page. And so these are rated, I tell people, these are rated R. They're edgy. They're not,
it's cozy, you know, like.
Yes, exactly. Only turn up the, you know, little bit of everything. So, what was your question?
What other books out there would you say are similar?
Oh, that's tough. You know, I have a lot of good friends that we share a sense of humor with. Robin Peterman, she writes mostly paranormal romance and other romances, but we share a lot of fans because of our sense of humor on the page. We're very, humor's really high in our books. And she's wonderful. We're friends off screen too, so we have a great time when we're together. She's one of them. I don't know, because, you know, I mix genres, and that's really what made me stumble out of the gate, was that I was this author who mixed my genres up. And back in the early 2000s, every time I'd apply to one of the big houses, you know, send in my manuscript, or my agent would, I would get a, we're sorry, but you really need to pick a genre. Are you going to be mystery? Or are you going to be humor? Are you going to be romance? What are you doing here? Or paranormal? And fortunately, the tides have turned, and now mixed genre is not a problem, and a lot of people do it. So yeah. I love that. But at first, I beat my head against the wall a lot. So, you know, I'm like many authors who they mix up, you know, several of the genres together and add humor. My books are not going to make you change your life and clean up your house or anything like that. what they're meant to do is give you some laughs, some smiles when you need an escape from regular life, when you just want to go and find something to laugh about and get away for a while. That's what these are, something to lift your spirits, you know, kind of a thing. They have a lot of nonfiction in them because I do a lot of research. Those historical elements in different stories that I bring in, that I incorporate into the story, especially like the Treasure Island, the Jackrabbit Junction series, there's usually some element of history that I'm teaching, you know, within the pages. I can't think of one right now because well, I need more copy. But
I love that because honestly, that's what I like about what you do and what you write. And that's what attracted me to it. Those are my favorite types. And I've argued and pushed back against other authors who say, you know, if you write fantasy, keep writing fantasy. That's what people want. And I'm like, but I don't read that way. And my brain doesn't think that way. This story, yeah, I could change it, but it really fits this other way. And J.D. Barker actually gave me some advice that I thought was perfect. He's like, you can do that. You can be successful, but you have to do it from the start. You can't write 10 books, all one genre, and then switch. You have to write three different genres right out of the gate. He said, think of the first Pearl Jam album. There were multiple styles of music on that album, and people loved it, and they could do whatever they want after that. So
Right. And I agree. I mean, if you look at the Deadwood Mystery series, that's mystery, paranormal, some romance, lots of humor. The one thread throughout all mine is humor. So there's that. And then if you look at that Deadwood Undertaker series, there's mystery, historical, you know, Western, paranormal, little bits of romance, little bit less, you know, kind of a thing. And then if you go to this Jackrabbit series, there's no paranormal, although, you know, the characters know each other a little bit and characters cross over into different series. But it's adventure, it's action, it's a little bit of romance, it's a lot of humor. But again, the genres slightly cross on all of my series. So if you get, you know, I do have people that go, oh, these are my favorite. Deadwood's my favorite. Oh, the Jackrabbit ones. Those girls are my favorite. So you kind of fit in, but then they like the other too. So I think because you cross them a little bit,
yeah,
it's like sewing it together. So it's a loose, you know.
I love that.
Like a quilt, I guess,
right,
of everything
right.
together.
And again, that's what I like. So let me digress for one moment. A question, earlier topic. Do you consider Die Hard and Lethal Weapon Christmas movies?
Yes, of course, because
okay.
I love those kind of movies. And they play Christmas songs and they have Christmas decorations.
Right. I got to watch Lethal Weapon every year when I'm wrapping presents. It's like my thing now. Okay.
And Die Hard, yes.
Yes, Die Hard, definitely. So why did you want to write this type of book, these genre mashups with the comedy and everything? Why did you want to write that?
You know, I wanted to write romances from the start because romance is a big market. And I grew up reading, I mean, I read Stephen King, I read all kinds of stuff, Westerns, Louis L'Amour, and romances galore. But I really wanted to start out in romance because my heart was in it. And I thought this is one of the, you know, doing research, romance market is huge. Right. And I thought, this is what I want to do. And I tried, and I just don't emote enough on the page. And, you know, I applaud those who do it really well, because it wasn't until I started adding, you know, like dead bodies, ghosts, killer, you know, horrible monsters or whatever was in there. Once that came in, then I really enjoyed it and the romance worked, because I'm not a romance only writer. I just like to have a little bit of it in there, you know?
Right.
So I tried that first and I didn't succeed. And then I moved into the mix of mystery with romance and humor. And suddenly I was getting bites. I got an agent. We were making our way through, you know, and back in the day when you were trying to get into the big houses, because that was what you did. Indie was such a new thing back then that you really didn't go there too much. And I actually, with Nearly Departed and my agent, we made it into one of the big houses through editing, and we made it clear up to the final acquisition for that book. And marketing came in, and they didn't think that since it was in the Midwest, it would have a big enough audience. So I was rejected at the tail end, which was oh so painful. But by then I'd written book two. And so that's when we decided, okay, we're going to form a publishing house. We know how to do this. We're going to go forth and we're going to publish. And we did. And then midway through that, I pulled out because I couldn't do both being a publisher and an author. I realized it was, and having a family.
Right.
So I had to choose, and I chose author, and I pulled everything. I had all rights to my book still, and I went solo. And so since 2015, I've been mostly indie. I am hybrid when it comes to audiobooks because I'm with Blackstone for part of them.
Okay.
But mostly indie otherwise. So yeah, that's kind of the whole thing condensed.
I like what you said, that you wanted to write this, you tried. And it's not that you couldn't write romance. It's just, it wasn't really you. So it came across, you know, I've heard that a lot also. And you found right. what worked for you, and it's been the most successful.
Right. And that goes back to your actual question, because again, I went off on that tangent.
I sometimes forget my questions are, so don't worry.
How did I choose this? It really kind of, you know, it chose me. This is what came Perfect. Out was this mixed thing. But that's like you. I like mixed genre movies. I liked mixed genre stories. So this is how it all came out. And thankfully, the market has shifted to where this is, you know, people like this as well. And we don't have to be in such boxes, you know, and the rigid things of only this, you know.
Right. I agree. And I read, like I said, lots of stuff. And these mashups, like one of my new favorite authors the last couple of years, Jeff Strand, it's horror comedy. And I always describe it as like an adult Goosebumps, you know. Ooh. But he would have probably never been published through Random House or anything.
Right. I'm going to write his name down because that sounds fun.
Yeah, he's a good cool. guy. Okay, so you are pretty much independent. You tried the trad route and almost made it. Do you think, this is just opinion, do you think your books would have been successful if you had made it into the trad, or do you think you're more successful now indie?
That's tough.
I understand.
I would think it depends if they would have put some marketing dollar behind me. So when I turned around and had to go indie and chose to go indie, I guess I shouldn't say had. One of the first things that I did was that's when Amazon's free books was a new thing. It wasn't, you know, what it is now. It didn't, you could put your book free and then pull it off. You didn't have to be only Amazon. You know, there was just all this, it was so new. And a really good friend of mine said, you got to try this. I did. And she was written up about, I think in the New York Times, it went so big for her. It was so brand new. So I took Nearly Departed and I put it for free and did the push. And oh my, it was like 40,000 books went out, boom, eBooks. And I was kind of shocked and scared and thought, what did I just do? Oh my gosh, I just gave away everything. But, you know, she was right. It really built. And by the time when I did that, I had the second book out already. So my second book went crazy.
Nice.
And sold really well. So, you know, that was a different marketing than New York was doing at the time, of course. So I still have a lot of those first readers that got that first book free way back in 2011. They're still with me and read everything, which is really cool. I don't know what New York would have done to market. And my fear then, as you know, even as time went on, was so many of my friends were getting two or three book contracts. And if they didn't make enough, you know, do enough sell through, their contracts were being pulled. So it killed their series because they Right. kept the rights to the first three. but then you can't write anymore because, you know, you're just promoting those first three, really.
Right.
And so I had that happening all around me. So I've often thought, you know, I think it was better. It was a horrible, painful lesson, but maybe it was better for me to have done it this way because I marketed in a way that they might not have.
And that's what I've been afraid of. I haven't even really wanted to look for an agent and try trad because I don't want to be told, well, the second book didn't do too well, so forget about the other five you have planned.
I've
heard that from other authors I know that it's happened to.
Yes. Yes. And that was a big fear of mine. Because you know, anyone knows once you invest in two or three books in a series that you plan to do a long series, that's a big investment of time and energy. Yeah. And to just have that shut down, yeah, that would have been horrible.
Right. Worse, I know somebody who was writing a trilogy and halfway through the second book was told that the first book didn't sell too well, so they're just go cut it at two. So he had to combine two and three and put out. And then it took off. So they told him to do another one. And he had already combined, but now he's up to book like 11 in the series. So,
oh, well, good. It worked out for him in the end, at least. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Jeez. So you've told us a little bit about the feedback from your readers already. But what would be your choice if you got approached? Would you rather turn your book into a movie or a set of movies or a TV show?
I love those series they do on like Netflix and Amazon where they have a season. Yeah. And you can, and I think you could take a book because my books run around 125,000 words. So they're not tiny. One of my friends always jokes that I write these long, long books, but I can't help it. That's a story. But that way you could take a longer book like that and fit it into, you know, 6 to 8 shows. And then have, you know, there's book one, your season one is book one. Right. I think that would be really cool to do, to see. And that way you can fully explore the plot of each book and enjoy it and not be crammed in, you know?
And that's so interesting because I think almost every author I talk to has the same answer just about. I mean, when I originally was asking that, I thought, you know, some people would say TV show, you know, but TV is so different nowadays. And it really, you know, Marvel changed a lot of that. When you're putting the same characters in with the same budget and the same quality of story, you know, on there. And Star Wars is doing better on TV in this decade than they are in movies. So,
right. You know,
those are big franchises. So,
yeah, I agree. It's really changed. It's fun to watch that. See, now I'm the type of person who loves a series. So I love, you know, like the Marvel universe and all that. I love all the different and how they'll do that thing at the very, very end, which is the teaser for another one. I always love that because it's like, oh, good, more's coming. You know, there's going to be another movie or there's going to be more to this. So,
and what we were talking about with genre and the mashup and the difference thing, that you really haven't seen a lot of on TV. It's, you know, each show is a very specific thing. We've got Hawkeye that tonight, that's our big thing. While we're making pies, we're going to watch Hawkeye. And The Witcher came out. But it's a fantasy. It's a superhero. And it's with a little comedy. You always get that comedy. But you don't get the paranormal and the romance and the comedy all. And I think that's an area where the indie books are ahead of the film and movie and TV industry right now. And I think we need to see something like that actually make it big. And that'll probably change a lot of things too.
I know. I'm excited. It just feels like now with all these different series and the streaming and the different things going on, I mean, the Sci-Fi Channel, all the different channels that show, you know, different series, it's like finally we get to have more variety, you know, in choice of shows instead of, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm old enough when I grew up with the big old box TV and, you know, turned the channel, we had three channels and that was it, you know, and it was whatever that was on them. Yeah, exactly. So HBO, when that came out, was wow, the biggest thing ever. So now if I look back, I think, wow, we were so limited. It was whatever the, you know, TV channels decided they wanted to show us.
At that time.
Was all that we got to see. And now we can, there's so much choice and we can see so many different things. It's really kind of fun.
Yeah, I agree. We didn't even have cable until I was a junior in high school. So.
Yes, small town in Ohio.
Yeah. And did you say Ohio?
I was Northwest Ohio. Yeah.
Where at?
Where are you from?
We live right by Kent State.
Oh, you're on the other side. Yeah. I grew up west of Toledo, okay. Right up in the corner by Indiana and Michigan, right. Like a mile from the Michigan line, right up in there. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah.
That was out in the boonies, farmland, you know.
That's what we got around here. I always tell my kids, I'm like, yeah, we had a 50-inch TV growing up. Of course, the screen was only 12 inches. You guys don't know the struggle with having to get up and walk through shag carpet to change the channel, you know?
Green shag carpet. Yes. That's what we had.
Green shag carpet. Yep. So, Ann, you mentioned a little bit about some of your favorite authors and books. Tell us what some of your favorite books are that you've enjoyed throughout your life.
There's a couple that I reread a lot. See, now I'm a character. I love character centric movies. I do like the action and all the other stuff, but character growth is really one of my favorite things to watch, to read. And so character driven stories that's what I write. You know, that's why I have these series. They're not individual little shows, you know, kind of a thing like Monk, you know, the TV show. It's more of, you really kind of want to read the whole thing to watch the character growth and change. So the books that I like to read are mainly about characters. And so I have different ones in different genres. For example, I have reread Louis L'Amour's Flint 25 times easily. It's my favorite Louis L'Amour. I love Flint. I don't know if you've ever read that.
I haven't read that one, no.
And I won't be giving anything away to tell you. It starts out with the hero. He's going back to New Mexico from New York City. This is back in the 1800s. And he's going there to die because he has cancer. So he comes into the story with this attitude of, I don't care what's going to happen. And he'll shoot. He doesn't care about people. He's going to die. So you have this really great character who's tough. And he knows he has nothing to lose. So when he comes across villains, you know what's going to happen. He doesn't care, which is wonderful. So that's Flint. Cheryl Rivas, she's a romance author that I ran into her books back in the 90s. She has a series, and I think it's called the Navajo Blessing series. But there's like three or four. But talk about character-driven romances where it's about the character growth. Unbelievable. It's one of my all-time favorites. And I've read the first in that series as well as the others. But the first, I've probably read that 40 times. I'm not kidding. I reread it and then I'll finish it and go, boy, I want to figure out how she made me really feel that way. And so I'll go back through it again. And I use those like Flint in that one to study because I'm trying to always improve my own writing and make my characters feel more real. The stories, you know, all that surrounding them, more colorful, more real, and bring in readers even more. So Stephen King, I love a lot of his, but Desperation is one of my favorites his. Do you remember that one?
I didn't actually care for that one as much. I liked, what was the Regulators was the opposite.
The Regulators one. Was the opposite. And then I liked, of course, Salem's Lot was one of them that was, creepy, scary. That was one of my favorites growing up. So some of his, and I've fallen away from reading him just because they're this thick and I write for a living and have a family. So I just don't have time. So, you know, he's one of them. Odd Thomas by, who is that? Dean Koontz?
Dean Koontz, one of my favorites.
I actually studied Odd Thomas to learn how to write setting and incorporate it in to a story better because he does it so well in that book. He uses words that makes the setting come to life and you feel it. You feel the creepiness or you feel, you know, wherever we are. So that's such a great story.
If you haven't listened to the audiobook of Odd Thomas, you should check it out because whoever reads it captures Odd Thomas so perfectly that I can't picture anybody else ever being Odd Thomas. His voice.
So have you... have you seen, there's a series, isn't there? A TV show.
There was a movie with Anton Yelchin, the Russian actor who was on Star Trek that died. They had a movie, but they had some trouble with the production and it was released overseas and almost not brought to America. And it was, the budget was like cut in half. And so it's okay. But I really had such high hopes for the movie. But yeah, the audiobook is wonderful. And if you've never read Kuntz's Watchers, that's probably...
I've read that too. That's a good one. Yeah, it's amazing.
Fantastic.
So yeah, and like I said, see, my problem is I get stuck on an author if I find one that it helps me think creatively, and then I love it. I'll read it, and I won't move on. So,
well,
I don't
want to know a problem. Interview authors and hear about all these great books, and then go like, I'm going to get that, and I'm going to get that one, and that one, and then 3 months later, they're like, "So did you read my book?" I'm like, "Oh my god, it's like number 752. I'll get to it.
I'll get there. Sorry. I bet. Yeah.
So you live out in Arizona. Do you have a favorite bookstore that you like to go to?
I don't. I'm really bad about bookstores. I have nothing against them. I love them, but I just don't. I tend to do so much online, and like you, I talk to authors, I meet authors, I have authors tell me you've got to check out this book. So I tend to buy online, whether it's an Amazon or one author that a good friend said, you got to read her books, and she's from Phoenix. So I did read one, and then I joke, we're good friends now, and I joke that I started stalking her, and I was like, I live just north of you, an hour and a half. Is there any way we could ever meet for coffee and just talk about books and blah, blah, blah? And now we're really good friends. So I tend to read a lot of my friends' books because we help each other out, whether it's, hey, read this and tell me where, what I need, or check this out, because it's a really good story. It reminds me of something you wrote. So yeah, I don't go into the bookstore anymore.
Well, yeah. I did the same thing with Jay Thorne. I found out he lived right up in Cleveland. I started kind of stalking him a little bit. And emails like, I'm really not stalking you, but yeah, I guess I kind of am. And I love that also about authors, that movie stars, there's different level. You don't get an average person talking to a big movie star, but quote unquote average people talk to authors because authors don't get that big head as much. I mean, even right. King and Patterson don't always come across as egocentric like actors sometimes do, even though right. you can't necessarily walk up to their house and knock on the door. But right. I found even some of the authors that I'm like, oh my gosh, how many books have you sold and how long have you been doing this? And they're just like, yeah, have a seat. Let's talk, So definitely different.
Right. It is. And it's really hard for a lot of us to go out and do the public thing and do, you see the actors all the time on, like the Tonight Show or whatever, and they're out there acting funny and they're so, and I watch them, I think, boy, why can't I be that funny? but it's really not most of our nature to be that outward thing. That's why we write. That's right. why we, do what we do. But so many that I meet, and every other year I do the South Dakota Festival of Books. Since so many of my books are set in South Dakota, I'm really fortunate that a lot of them in the state consider me one of their own. I mean, my mom nice. Lives there, and I've been there most of the time since I was a kid, but every year that's a real mix of genres and writers coming in, and it's so much fun to meet all these other people and hang out. Like one year I hung out with a bunch of kids authors. And learned what it was like for them and how much they hit the road. I had no idea they were on the road so much.
Yeah.
But they really are, And then the next year I'll meet another author. And sometimes I meet these really big name authors that come in for the festival, and they're wonderful. And we have a great time. And some of them, I have their phone numbers in my phone because they were like, call me and we'll go to dinner. And I look at it now and I'd never call them, but I'm like, I can't get rid of that number. That's right. so-and-so in my phone, right?
Right.
So yeah. Well,
that's one of the things I want to do with all the authors I've met on the podcast. As I travel around, if I know I'm going to a place where someone I've talked to is there, I ask them, hey, let's meet up at this bookstore and do a little right. walkthrough and talk and look at the bookstore and stuff. And then we have a little video, these two authors going through a bookstore. And we featured the bookstore on my website and stuff. I haven't done a whole lot of them because of the last year and a half. But I hope to do some more now that things are settling down. So if I get through Arizona, I will definitely stop. We'll call and we'll do a bookstore.
Yes.
We'll find one.
Yes, definitely. Yes, that would be fun. There's so much to see out here too. You might go, I'll see if I can fit you in between the Grand Canyon and all the other stuff that's out here.
I love Arizona. I've been there. I love the climate. I love the way things look. Because Ohio, I love Ohio. Green, the trees and all that. But you know, with Arizona, people have the red rock lawns. And I was fascinated by that. You know, I loved it.
Right. Well, one of the things when we lived in Seattle for a while, then we had kids, and then we ended up moving down here to a little bit smaller area for our kids and to get them outside more because it's so rainy. And they just were always inside in Seattle. So anyway, fourth grade field trips here. It's the Grand Canyon. And I'm like, in Ohio, we went to a slaughterhouse. So
or a bowling alley.
Yeah, so it's like, wow, we're doing the Grand Canyon for a field trip. And I always tell my kids, you don't know how lucky you are.
Right.
Nobody. And out here in Arizona, I tell you, they do field trips big. It's always an hour to an hour and a half bus ride somewhere. And it's these major archaeology sites or things that are just incredible. And I'm like, yeah, we camped at our little local lake. So. Yeah.
Which, funny you say that. My wife and I were just talking about VR and how you could do those things with VR. I've wanted to research like our local little town and do a VR program where it overlays the buildings. You could choose like 1950 and see what everything looked like. And then 1820, you know, whatever. And see it through the VR goggles while you're walking around town. So you see it. Or I guess it would be AR more than VR, where it's overlaid on top of what's there. I thought that'd be cool.
So that's really something that they're coming out with, or they've come out with?
They do have tours of areas that you can do VR. They're like Mount Everest, and you could do a tour and climb Mount Everest and see it in VR. But the AR thing, I think I would love to see and do.
It would be just really cool.
Yeah.
That would be so much fun.
So, all right. So to finish up talking about books, and then we'll move on to some author stuff. Tell everybody why they should go out and get your books. I know because they look really cool, but why would you say people should get your books?
Well, it's like I said earlier, if you just want to take a break from all the crazy crap going on out there, or maybe something, you know, is tough in your family life or your job's making you crazy. If you pick up one of my books, I'm going to take you to a different, you know, it's contemporary. It's not totally crazy, but a different place. And in the Old West one's a different time. And the goal is always when I write is to include laughter and give you something to laugh about. Now in the Deadwood Mystery series, the heroine is Violet Parker, and she gets in some messed up stuff, and she's very spunky, and she gets herself out. She has two kids. She's struggling single mom. But she gets some real zingers into her, you know, one of her coworkers who's a real jerk. And it's, you know, the paranormal, the ghosts, all that kind of fun. It's just, if you want to get away from reality for a bit and have some fun and action adventure, pick up one of my books and give them a try.
Nice. And some people don't realize that that's a powerful thing fiction can do, that it's needed in today's world. So I love that. Thank you.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So, all right. So, thank you for talking about your book. Let's go talk about a few author things.
Okay, let's do it.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe, sometime in the near future, it might be you.